Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends. Welcome back to my favorite part of the afternoon, spending time with you, prescribing hope for healthy families. And in a world this summer, it just seems like the news cycle is out of control. And if you're feeling angry about some of the things that are going on, if you are feeling offended at things that have happened over the course of this last week, over the course of this last summer, over the last 5 years, well, we have a show for you. Listen, I'm going to be really honest with you right up front and tell you that our guest today, Brant Hansen, we had scheduled actually about a month ago when Hurricane Beryl hit the Houston area, and we had to reschedule him because we had no internet, no signal, no power. And I believe that God was working in that, because as I reread this book over the last few days to refresh myself on what he had talked about, I found myself very deeply convicted. And it is my prayer that you will be convicted too. We are talking about his book, Unoffendable. Now, if you're a regular listener, you will have heard our last show. We have had Brant on the show before, where we talked about his book, Life is Hard, God is Good, Let's Dance, Living at Peace in a World Gone Mad, which is also a very appropriate message for us at this time. But today we're going to be talking about his book, Unoffendable. I know it seems impossible, right? How can we be unoffendable? But how just one change can make all of life better. Now, this book has sold more than 200,000 copies. And Brant, you may hear him on so many different things because he has a great radio voice and does a lot of radio, but he has 2 million weekly listeners on the Brant Hansen Show. So he is a syndicated radio host, one of the most listened to in the country. We're so blessed to have him today. He also co-hosts the popular podcast, the Brant and Sherry Oddcast, and he works extensively as an advocate of Cure International, which is a global network of hospitals and programs for children with correctable disabilities. Brant, we are so glad to have you back on the show. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I love talking about this stuff. And you're right. Like, the timeliness of it is just perfect.
It is perfect because the whole world is feeling offended. And, you know, we live in this world that says, hey, you can't tell me what to believe or say. I'm going to speak my truth. Oh, but also I'm very offended by you speaking your truth. You know, it's this really oppositional mindset that we're in. So tell us about the book, how you got the idea for it, how the concept came about.
Well, I was just asking a question, and this is, let me say this. I have to tell people whenever I talk about this book, and I present it quite a bit in person, I tell people, like, or I ask them, if you're a believer in Jesus, do you think God can still show you something? Like, you can learn something new, even if you're 70 years old, or you're 80, or you're 50, or you're 40, like, that you can still learn something? Because I have to say that, because everybody thinks they already know this subject. And I don't think we do like we think we do. We all think we're entitled to anger. And we grew up that way. And so I did too. I grew up thinking, okay, there's righteous anger and there's unrighteous anger. And I should have righteous anger and I should hang on to that. It's good to have righteous anger. Okay, so I grew up thinking that, like most believers. And then I was asking on the air one time, I was like, hey, how long are we supposed to be mad about stuff in the news? Like, this incident happened locally, this crime or whatever. It's like really upsetting. I remember it had happened at the time. It was in Fort Lauderdale. It was just a local news story, and everybody was ticked off about it. And no one can answer the question, how long do I stay mad? If it's righteous anger, you know, 2 weeks, a year? What about if stuff's happened in your life? I've gone through trauma as a child. That's someone's fault. Am I still supposed to be angry with him? And the truth is, the Bible, and this is what's shocking to people, and I'd like people to consider this, even if you think, there's no way this could be true. As you're listening to this, please consider, the Bible never tells us it's good to hang on to anger. It never says that. In fact, there is no righteous anger for humans in the Bible. It's shocking. There is righteous anger, for sure. It's God's. So God does get angry. Jesus does clear out the temple. He's not a sinner, though. We are. And so what we're told to do is to forgive, which means release that right to anger that we think we're entitled to. And in fact, we're supposed to get rid of it before the sun goes down. The Bible is incredibly consistent about this. It never treats human anger as a good thing. Never once. It's always destructive.
That is radical, Brent. And, you know, for me, as a nurse, I'm looking at the impacts of anger. And when we look at scientific research, we know that anger raises your blood pressure. It constricts your blood vessels. It releases inflammatory cells. It increases your risk of a heart attack. It damages the nerve cells in the prefrontal cortex and the hippocampus in your brain. It damages your decision-making, your attention span, your executive function, your memory. It causes muscle tension that can cause chiropractic problems that you have. It triggers gastrointestinal discomfort. So I feel like we can't ignore the fact that hanging on to anger for a long time, holding on to it, it literally destroys our body. And the argument that you make in here is that it destroys our soul. But we live in a culture that's just perpetually angry. And I want to read to you from page one of your book. You say, okay, so this may sound like the dumbest thing you've ever read, but here it goes. You can choose to be unoffendable. I actually heard a guy say this at a business meeting, and it's striking because I'd never ever thought about it before. And I remember something from a business meeting, and I was actually invited to a business meeting, which, Brant, is hilarious. And you talked about it's just, you know, that we can choose to be unoffendable, and you found this offensive. So how do we transition from this anger culture and this perpetual state of offense to letting that go to God?
Okay, well, I'm glad we have time to talk about this, because this is the most important thing I think you can talk about in life, because people are imprisoned by this. They have no way out. I just read a scientific article today where they were talking about how venting doesn't help anger. This wasn't from a Christian standpoint, but they're literally talking about how we have no solutions for this as a culture. There's no way out. But they never talk about forgiveness as an option. So that's what's so interesting to me. Jesus is a genius. He knows how to live. He's telling us we're supposed to forgive because we've been forgiven. That's why we forgive people. We don't wait for them to apologize. We don't wait till they deserve it. They may never deserve it. We forgive because of what God's done for us. That's the resource for this. So what you can do as you grow into this is each morning, before the day starts, you know humans are going to be humans. They're going to be evil. They're going to do stuff, annoying stuff or offensive stuff. They're going to do it. But you start the day going, Lord, help me forgive people in advance. I don't want to be shocked by human nature over and over and over. The same stuff. My boss says stuff like that. That's what he does. I'm not going to be shocked again that he does it. Like, this should be something that, as a believer, we know, because we know humans are broken. So we go into the day with that sort of an attitude, and you start to become a different sort of person, where you start to pray for people who cut you off. You start to pray for people who are annoying. And it changes, honestly, it changes who you are, and then you start to react to things differently. You get a different nature, if that makes sense.
Well, it does, and you give a lot of scripture, and you gave a comparison, actually, of a verse from Ephesians 4:26. In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. And you compared that to the Message, which translated as go ahead and be angry. You do well to be angry, but don't use your anger as fuel for revenge, which is actually not what the scripture said. So how do we differentiate this from righteous anger? You talked about this a little bit, Brant, but recognizing that only God really can be righteously angry, because we are anything but righteous.
Okay, we know we're pious. Like, the idea that I can righteously be like, I can hold on to anger against that person. But Jesus tells a story about the unmerciful servant. Like, one guy is forgiven for a lot, and then he turns around and won't forgive somebody else, and how upset God is about that. Like, we think, oh, I have a right to be angry at this person or that person. I'm going to hold on to this anger because they're so bad. Do you actually believe the story about Calvary, that you actually had a role in that? Like, look what God has done for us. It's out of gratitude that we extend this to other people. It doesn't mean what they did is right. And again, it doesn't mean you have to stay and it doesn't mean you have to forget what happened. It means that you release your right to anger, and it leads to healing for you. So you can hold on to it. All those deleterious physiological effects that you listed, you can keep that in your system. It'll kill you, but it's not the way we're supposed to live. The amazing thing about that scripture, Ephesians 4:26, is whenever I talk about anger, that's the one people quote. They're like, but praying anger must be good, because in Ephesians 4:26, it says, in your anger, do not sin. And they're right. That's what it says. And then I ask, wait, why did you only quote me half the verse? And that's the half a verse that people stake their entire theology of anger. I'm entitled to anger because in your anger, do not sin, it says. And the rest of the verse says, and be sure to get rid of your anger before the sun goes down. Five verses later, it says, get rid of all anger. It's so consistent. It's because anger will kill us. And we're not entitled to it because God has forgiven us. So it's not about having no boundaries. It's not moral relativism. It's nothing like that. And if people are like, well, are you saying that, you know, I have to stay in relationship with this person? I'm like, no, that's not what forgiveness means. But if you don't forgive, you will be staying in relationship with that person in your head for the rest of your life. So this is freedom. Jesus' way of living is brilliant. It's freeing. It's lighter. It's an easier burden. Like, it's the only way out. And it is something we can practice and we get better at.
Well, and Brant, you've lived this, because I've heard you tell the story about your wife being attacked and then you crashing a press conference, and you've lived out exactly what you're talking. Can you share that story with our audience?
It's unbelievable. So after I wrote this book, you can imagine, you know, you're going to get tested on it. And this happened in downtown Harrisburg, Midtown. And yeah, my wife was attacked in broad daylight by this guy, the physical attack. I won't get into all the details, but it was awful. She was okay, but it was traumatizing. They didn't arrest the guy, and I couldn't understand why. We called police repeatedly. We called the mayor's office. We called the chief of police, the chief detective. Like, they would not arrest. He would walk by our window, her attacker. And so I followed him. We followed him back to his place. We called, said, hey, he lives here. Here's a photo of him. They didn't do anything. And so finally, I put on a suit coat, and I said, I'm going downtown, and I'm not leaving the mayor's office until they arrest this guy. It's not out of anger that I'm doing this. I'm just dogged. We've been praying for him. We want the best for him. But there happened to be a murder on our street where someone was hit in the head. And my wife was attacked. A guy tried to hit her in the head with a hammer. And so I thought, enough. I know for public safety, I've got to do something about this. So I go downtown. I didn't even know what building the mayor's office was in. So I kept walking around, going in the wrong buildings. I walk in, and this is almost unbelievable, but it happened. And it's on YouTube. I walked into one official building in Harrisburg, and they were having a press conference in the lobby about crime in Midtown and violence. And it was the chief of police and the chief detective and the mayor all up front. I walked in behind the reporters, and they were saying, we need people in this community to give us tips. You know, you got to get involved or we won't be able to solve this crime problem. And then they said, any last questions? I know. So I'm like wearing my suit coat, and I just walked in, and they're like, anybody have any questions? And I was like, yes, I have a question. Why won't you arrest the guy who attacked my wife? And so all the cameras swung around on me. It was just really funny. And you can still watch it on YouTube. It says Harrisburg man crashes press conference or something like that.
Well, hold on. I've got more questions. I've got more questions about that, Brant. We're up against a break. But I mean, God does have a sense of humor, and God does work for justice. I mean, I see that as God giving justice. But we've got so much more to talk about how you can become unoffendable. Yes, you can. It is possible. We'll talk more about that with Brant Hansen when we come back right on the other side of this break. Don't go away. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. You see, when a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 underwrites ultrasounds for the entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Then sings my soul, my Savior.
Welcome back, friends. We are talking to Brant Hansen, the author of Unoffendable, How Just One Change Can Make All of Life Better. That song is How Great Thou Art, Until That Day by Matt Redman. And you know what? Despite all of the things that are going on, all of the things that we are angry and offended about, we can still sing that timeless truth that God is great and He is much greater than any action that we could ever bring about by our anger and our offense. And we're talking to Brant about his book. And it turns out what he says is it turns out giving up your right to be offended can be one of the most freeing, healthy, simplifying, relaxing, refreshing, stress relieving, encouraging things you can do. It's a radical, provocative idea. We're not entitled to get offended or stay angry. And so that's what we're talking about. And before the break, Brant was telling us a story about his own wife and feeling like they had such injustice. And I think, Brant, what ended up happening with that situation was it was just a clerical error. Is that right?
They didn't arrest the guy for weeks. And so after I crashed the press conference on accident, they had him arrested within a couple hours. And I had friends and neighbors say really nice things to me because they saw it all over the news when I was at the press conference defending my wife. And they saw I wasn't angry, but I wasn't going to let it go. Like, I'm calm. I'm not outraged, but I'm not going to back down. And there's something really affecting about that. And I haven't always done that well, but I've gotten better at it. And I think that's the sweet spot for us. You can do the right thing. You can defend the vulnerable. You can be a just society. You don't do it out of anger. You do it because it has to be done. And whatever you do with anger, you can do better without it. It's true. Dallas Willard said that, and I've always remembered that. Whatever you do with anger, you can do better without it. We're supposed to get rid of it because it'll kill us, and it clouds our judgment. What we need to do, and this is why when people are like, well, we have to stand for justice. We have to get angry about this and that. Don't you see this? Like, no, I do see that. I do. But think about like the police. They're charged with protecting the vulnerable, and they're part of the justice system. Do we want them doing their jobs out of anger? Would they do a better job if they're angry? Of course not. Do we want judges to render verdicts out of anger? Do we want like the military acting out of it? No, it clouds your judgment. It doesn't make you better. And you can still do the right thing, but you don't do it out of anger. You can be grieved for the condition of the world, but you also have to remind yourself, and this is really key, I think, on a daily basis. Like, remember, we're not in a flesh and blood battle here. This person that you're thinking, I need to judge them and be really angry at them and hold on. Like, there's a spiritual reality behind this. And so what happens is over time, when you start practicing this and praying for your enemies, your character changes and you see things differently. And again, it's not relativism, not one bit. You'll actually do a better job of doing what needs to be done if you don't do it out of anger and you come at it from a place of I forgive these people. I'm releasing my right to anger. There's still consequences, but it's not going to be out of anger.
Well, and you share a lot of scriptures about this. And one of the scriptures is Ecclesiastes 7:9. Do not be quickly provoked in your spirit, or do not be quick in your spirit to become angry, for anger resides in the lap of fools. And another version, the ESV, anger lodges in the heart of fools. And when we hold on to anger in that way, we've already talked about the health benefits. And one of the things you said really stuck with me, Brant, because you said, imagine that you're sitting in the food court in the mall and you're listening to the conversation around you. You are not going to hear people saying, oh, I did this to someone else and I deeply regret it. And I feel bad about it. And I learned this. You hear people saying, guess what she did to me? Guess what he said? Can you believe this? I am outraged. And so how do we make this practical, Brant? How do we, you know, there are a lot of people, there are a lot of us who just feel angry. How do we practically begin to have the discipline of laying that down?
Okay. Genuinely believe that God sent his son to die on a cross for you because that's how bad it was. That's how bad we are. And I don't say that as a guilt trip. I'm just like, wow, that was a bloody mess. That was because of me. How do I then turn around and think I can render judgment on other people ultimately? Why don't I leave that to God? Why not? It makes life better. You know, Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians, and this is kind of a hidden scripture that people don't want to read or memorize, but it's 1 Corinthians 4. You can look it up. He says, I don't know other people's motives. He said, I don't even know my own. So we'll have to let God sort it out in the end. We don't know what their background is. That's why we can go off on people very easily. We're always offended. We're always upset about something. I got it. But we don't even know our own motives. So let him sort it out. It is a weight off. And again, it doesn't make everything fine. Like whatever you do is fine. That's not it at all. But it's this releasing of our anger. Otherwise, it's going to kill us. And by the way, if people think I need to be righteously angry about this and that, I travel the world. I'm very thankful I get to do that. But I can give you a list of 1,000 other things to be angry about. I mean, is this really the life of peace that Jesus is leaving us? We'll turn on our news network and get angry about everything. Like that, I feel like he gave us this gift of peace and we're like, yeah, that's nice. We're going to take it back and return this gift because we'd rather have the news 24/7. Like, this is my one chance. So when I say that, I mean, on a daily basis, be intentional at the beginning of the day. I'm not going to be shocked by the same people doing the stuff they do. Somebody cuts me off in traffic. I know that's going to happen. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pray for that person who cut me off. This is one of the most practical things you can do. It's not religious pie in the sky stuff. You pray for blessings for that person, for peace in that person's life. You will feel your body temperature going down as you do it. You will feel your heart turn toward that person instead of being angry. You'll be able to sleep at night instead of being angry. Your sleep will be sweet, it says in Proverbs. Like, every time, by the way, in Proverbs that it discusses anger, it's negative. Like, the Bible's so consistent about this. Human anger is destructive. James 1:20, here's another scripture. It literally says that there's nothing about man's anger that brings about the righteousness of God. Nothing. So, daily thing, I remind myself, I don't know everybody's motives. I don't know what they're going through. I have limits to my own knowledge. I have to pray for the people I'm angry with. I pray for them to have peace because usually they're toxic in some way. They're not at peace. If I do something kind for them or pray for them, my heart changes. You can feel it. Anybody who's experienced this, you do something kind for somebody who drives you crazy, your heart will bend toward them. You can respond with kindness as well. There's a proverb that says a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. I have found that when I give a gentle answer to somebody who's being mean to me, it turns away my own wrath as well. Like I feel my body temperature dropping. This becomes a practice. And that changes who we're becoming. This is actually discipleship is what it is. We're doing the serious stuff that Jesus unpacked in the Sermon on the Mount, like loving our enemies.
Well, you know, when I'm reading from your book, and a lot of this, what if you get down to the heart of it, we don't want to lay down our anger, and we're trying to think, well, is this righteous anger or not? And this is what you said. This was particularly convicting. You said, we struggle with trusting God to mete out justice. We're afraid he won't mete out justice, that people won't get what they deserve. And then you talk about the reason that we can't determine whether our anger is righteous or not is because we can't trust ourselves. Trust in yourself sounds like a perfectly normal thing to do. But the problem is, for the believer, it isn't biblical at all. We are deceptive to the core. From Jeremiah 17:9, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick. Who can understand it? Or from Proverbs again, 14:12, there is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way to death. And that's a far cry from Proverbs 3, which we all know. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. And do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. How do we trust God to handle some of these things that we see around the world that are unjust? I mean, your wife being attacked is so wrong. It's so unjust, Brant. How do we trust God and rest in him in that?
I think we have to lean on what he's done for us. And Jesus said, I know we talked about this last time a little bit, but Jesus himself said we could be of good cheer. For I've overcome the world, he said. Now, if I'm a believer, if I actually trust him, he knows something that I don't. Because I would look at the news or everything that's going on around the world and just one more thing to be upset and agitated and worried and angry about, like over and over and over for the rest of my life. He's saying, no, be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. He knows how this ends. He knows the backstory, and he's telling us this. If I'm actually going to trust him, if I don't, who am I going to trust? You got to trust somebody. I submit that he's the best one to trust that's available. Everything else falls apart. And he literally finishes the Sermon on the Mount when he's telling us this stuff. He's like, look, if you just heard what I said and you don't put it into practice, you're going to be like a man who builds his house on the sand. It's going to fall. If you do put it into practice, you're going to be fine. Like, I believe that. Who else are you going to trust? It's all going to fall down otherwise. Like, so I remind myself of that. And I also think you can remind yourself of how he's been faithful in the past to you. Like, there's things you can review in your own life, maybe. Like, he's always been good. Like, I need to review that and be thankful, put myself in a mindset of gratitude. And I think that plays a big role, continuing to bring that into our minds and our consciousness, why we're so grateful.
Well, you have a lot of really good stories in the book, and one of them is about a baseball announcer. And one of your friends who was kind of straight-laced, did everything, you know, that he was supposed to do, and another that was not so much. And their relationship, really, it was interesting how he, you know, didn't get angry about it, but instead chose to minister to him. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, I was making the point that, honestly, being unoffendable is ministry. Like, anybody who works in a nursing home or stuff, you got people that may throw their orange juice at you. You don't respond in anger. You're there to serve these people. And it's if you're upset, and like, it stops you from serving people. Anyway, my friend John is awesome. He's still doing this. He's a baseball announcer for spring training down here in Florida. He's so good at it. Very, very straight ahead guy. You know, comes in with a briefcase and has everything set up. He dresses nice. The guy he sits next to is a former major leaguer who'd fallen on really hard times. I mean, everything had fallen apart in his life. That dude was keeping the scoreboard and stuff up in the press box. The most profane guy I think I've ever been around in my life. Cause I filled in for John. So I would do the PA for these teams, announcing the batters and stuff. And this guy was like, his vocabulary, the things he was saying was just awful. And I was thinking, man, how does John put up with this? Because John is just the straight-laced, you know, old-fashioned guy. Well, the dude who was really tough to take, I said, you know John, huh? And he's like, oh, yeah. We started talking about John because he wasn't there. I'm filling in for him. The guy starts crying. And he's like, you know what John did for me? Now, this guy has had an awful life. Everything's falling apart. John got this Sports Illustrated cover when I was on the cover of Sports Illustrated and made this plaque for me. And he had it inscribed to him, like, in how much he appreciated him. He's like, that's the nicest thing anybody's ever done for me. He starts crying. I was like, that is so interesting. So my friend, instead of getting offended by this guy, he knows he's broken already. Instead of that, he does something beautiful for him, and it affects him deeply. And I've seen that in my own life. I've seen my wife be kind to people. They're literally trying to be as offensive as they possibly can, and we just don't return it. And eventually it opens them up to being prayed with. You just would not believe. But not taking offense is a real door opener, because they expect you to, and then to angrily walk off. When you don't, it makes them wonder, what's going on? There's something different with this person.
That is so convicting and so hard, Brandt. And you talk a lot, you make a point to say that anger and rest are always at odds, and you can't have both at once. And so often I think that we are not resting. We feel like we're in this perpetual fight, that we have to keep going, that we can't give up, that God needs us, you know, to speak out, which sometimes we are convicted and sometimes we must speak out, just like you spoke out at a press conference. But you also contrast that with the fact that we're told in Psalm 46:10 to be still, or to stop striving and know that he is God. And you say that the original Hebrew is suggestive of stopping the fight, letting go and relaxing. And as we are going into this next break, I want to read this from your book. You said, God wants us to drop our arms. No more defensiveness, no more taking things personally. He'll handle it, really. Trust him. Rest. Quit thinking it's up to you to police people and that God needs you to take a stand. God needs nothing. We have to quit trying to parent the whole world. Quit offering advice when exactly zero people ask for it. Quit being shocked when people don't share our morality. Quit serving as judge and jury in your own mind of the person who just cut you off in traffic. Quit thinking you need to discern what others' motives are, and quit rehearsing in your mind what that other person did to you. This is just such a posture of humility and thinking about, what are we really angry about? And do we have the right to hold on to that? Or do we trust God and follow his conviction? Listen, I got more questions. We'll be right back with Brandt Hansen, author of Unoffendable, when we come back on the other side of this break.
The American Family Association's mission is to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. Our goal is to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. We believe true morality flows from biblical principles and directs people to the manner in which God intends them to live.
Thank you for standing with the American Family Association as we seek to stop the erosion of godly values. When you hear this,
this is American Family News.
You know what follows is the truth. Your news from a Christian perspective.
Hundreds of teachers are going to have to walk into that school building, and they are forced to swallow political ideology that in many cases violates their very faith and conscience.
If you miss it at the top of the hour, American Family News podcasts are available at AFN.net, and sign up for our daily news brief at AFN.net.
We worship the God who is. We worship the God who evermore will be. He opened the prison doors. He parted the raging sea. My God, he holds the victory.
We won't be quiet. We shout out your praise. Oh, oh,
Welcome back, friends. We do shout out God's praise. That's House of the Lord by Phil Wickham. And there is joy to be found in the house of the Lord. So if you are trying to navigate all of these current events, all of this global conflict, all of this political just craziness, and you're feeling angry and you're feeling anxious, then today's show is for you. We are talking to Brant Hansen, the author of Unoffendable, How Just One Change Can Make All of Life Better. And we've been talking about how it is not good for us to hold on to anger. It is not good for us to act from a motivation of anger. We are not talking about saying that we don't speak out against injustice or that we don't call a spade a spade. We're not saying any of that. We're just saying, let's look at our heart. And by the way, I have to say, if you're listening in and you heard that commercial for MediShare, yep, that was Brant. And in one of his, and in the chapter in his book, Brant, I have to share this because it's so funny. You said you recently got a tweet in response from someone who just couldn't take it anymore. Who knows how they find that I'm that guy. He was just plain brilliant in his brevity and directness. And this is what he said to you. Dude, you're the worst. Every time I hear your voice, I want to drive my Jeep into a tree, because this is just what people say online. And you said, your response was, fair enough, but before you do that, can I tell you about a healthcare plan where you can save $500 a month?
Right, sure.
You contrast that a lot in the book, like how you can see something offensive online and you can spend hours constructing a witty response and then look and then decide you're going to delete it. But oh no, someone's already seen it, so maybe I'll say something back. Or you can just pray for that person, say whatever needs to be said, and let go of the anger. And Brant, we said that we were going to go here. Let's talk about the Olympics, because this is a great example of this dichotomy we were talking about. So yeah. I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah. So what's weird is the response that I got from people was, there's one camp of people going, you shouldn't be insulted by this. We shouldn't. That's not an insult. No one's insulting. It was actually a reenactment of a Greek blah, 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 blah. Well, that wasn't true. It was actually a mock-up of the Last Supper. They admitted it. They talked about it ahead of time. Like, we know this. And we saw it. So it is an insult. Okay? Then there's the other response, which is, okay, it's an insult. Therefore, let's insult them. Or let's be righteously angry about this. We'll be the judges of... But there's another way. And it's genius, and it's the Jesus way. He actually said, when someone does this to you, be happy. He actually said that. Rejoice and be glad. And I told people this. I'm telling, like, ostensibly Jesus followers or Christians, this is what Jesus says about this. And they're like, well, I'm not going to be happy about it. Okay, you don't have to. But Jesus said you should, whatever that counts for. Like, I would think that would count for a lot. And he said you should be happy about it because it gives you an opportunity to be like the Father who blesses the unjust and the just alike. It gives you a chance to be like God when you love your enemies. It's not that you're not acknowledging they're slapping at you. You know you got slapped, but they don't dictate your next move. What they want you to do is be like them and be angry and consumed with anger. But a toddler can do that. Somebody who grows up in Jesus, though, can be glad, oh, hey, I have a chance to be like my Father. You're never more like God than when you love your enemies. I'm going to pray for these people. It doesn't make what they did okay. When Jesus is on the cross saying, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing. He's not saying, this is okay. This is fine. But at some level, they really don't know, do they? Like, they really don't. They're in rebellion, too, so they're blinded in their understanding. But God forgave me while I was yet a sinner, when I was blind. I have to extend that to other people. Jesus says, forgive and you'll be forgiven. Like, this isn't a side issue. So here's a chance. Here's a direct slap to us because of Jesus. And he said, rejoice and be glad, and don't return insult for insult. And when he says, turn the other cheek, again, it's genius because it's freedom. You do not dictate how I respond. You can slap me. Doesn't mean I have to slap you back. I'm free. My sin nature says I slap you back. That's just how it goes. That's human nature. But I'm a different creation now. And I get to demonstrate it. So I hope that makes sense.
Well, it does, you're quoting from Matthew 5. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. So yes, you're saying it was wrong. It was offensive. It was. But we get to choose how we respond. And, you know, I think I want to read from your book again, Brant, and you say that feeling powerless is sometimes excruciating. We want justice and we want it now. And if we can't get it, we can at least harbor our self-righteous anger. And sometimes it's all we think we can do. But the Bible tells us to do something truly revolutionary. And it's completely at odds with that. And it's wait. And then you give all of these scriptures where we're told to wait on the Lord. Wait on the Lord and be of good courage, and he will strengthen your heart. And then he says it again. Wait, I say, on the Lord. Psalm 27:14. Psalm 37:9. For evildoers shall be cut off, but those who wait on the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. And so how do we, that is really, you said, and this is what you said in your book, I'm quoting you, that is really, 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 really hard. So I know, and you just said really, yeah, that's so hard.
Yes, yes, it is very hard. But you know what's harder? A life of unforgiveness is way harder than forgiving. So Jesus' way of living is lighter and easier, he said. And at first, it's really hard to forgive people, but then it starts to become a habit and a way of life, and you start to forgive people in advance. I already knew before the Olympic ceremonies happened, I already knew that humans were messed up, seriously messed up. This stuff has been going on for centuries, this rebellion against God, this like the perverted way we can see the world. I'm not shocked. I know this because I'm a Christian. So I can't be shocked constantly. I already know this. Is it disgusting? Yeah. Yes, but my heart has to be in response to it. Like, I hate the fact that we're broken. I'm thankful for my own forgiveness, and I'm going to respond with love. If I do post something online, it'll be seasoned, I hope, with wisdom and love and a sense of peace, because that's who we are. We can't abandon love, joy, peace, gentleness, you know, goodness, self-control. Can't abandon that. Those are actually the weapons of the war. Like, this is who we are. You don't just say, well, I'll throw that out. And for people, like Christians in mass, like, I don't want to hear what Jesus has to say about this. Well, okay, that's a problem. His way is radical. But this is called discipleship, actually. This is being his disciple. We listen to him and we go, you know what? I'm going to do it. And whoever puts his words into action, like somebody builds their house on a rock, you know what's hard is building a house. You know what's even harder? Having to build it again because you built it on the wrong thing. Jesus' way of life is easier. I keep trying to tell people that. Like, it's actually easier than living a life of bitterness.
Well, you also say that worry and anger often go hand in hand. They're both about feeling threatened, and they both represent ultimately a lack of trust. But there's a flip side, and it's good news. We get to see all over again how freeing it is to really trust God. And you say, my anger isn't a sign of trust. It's the very opposite. I'm worried. Someone's going to get away with something. God's not noticing. It's all up to me. And that kind of anger is perfectly human, but it's destructive. And you contrast that with rest in the Lord. Wait patiently for him. Yeah. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret. It only causes harm. I have chills. Like, this, that is deeply convicting to me.
It's
so how
true.
Do you joyfully work
all
for justice
this.
And mercy, Brett? It's convicting.
Well, that you're playing, because you're playing from a strong hand. You do know that, look, you do trust the Lord with all of this. I can't control the world. Good grief. I can't. I just have to admit that. I can't even control myself sometimes. Like, what? I guess when I finish perfecting me, I'll move on to controlling everybody else. But, like, here's the thing. We talk about this with regard to anxiety. Anger, fear is a response. It's a human, it's normal response. Animals respond with fight or flight. We do, too. That's what it is. It's a perception of threat. But if we hold this in our system, this is why we can acknowledge as humans it happens. We get, like, there's a flash of anger when something happens, but, like, you feel threatened. We have to go to work immediately and get rid of it, or write to it, as quickly as we can before it destroys us. Because it will. This is for us to thrive. God is telling us how to live. The way of Jesus is the best way to live. You'll be healthier. It won't interfere with your other relationships. But literally all those physical things that you listed, the cortisol in your system, the inflammation, the heart problems caused by us and our righteous anger. You really think God wants us to roil in this, all of this stuff? Like, let him handle it. Let him handle righteous anger, because his anger is righteous. We're sinners. We're not supposed to be trusted with it. He can be trusted with it. He can be trusted with a vengeance too, and we can't. It's his, he said, because he's perfect. We're supposed to forgive. And when people are like, I'm like Jesus in the, you know, throwing out the money changers in the temple, that's who I am. Like, no. Actually, in that story, you're the money changers. Like, we're the sinners. He's the judge. We can do what we need to do to address injustice and defend the vulnerable. We just do it better without anger. We do it way better.
I'm going to say something kind of that's going to step on some toes here, but, you know, you talk about our anger impacting those around us and impacting our families. And right now, honestly, Brant, you're a dad. We have a lot of parents. I'm a mom. We have a lot of parents who are angry about what is going on in the world, and we are so scared that our kids are not going to adopt our worldview and that they'll be led astray. But honestly, a lot of our kids are looking at what we believe, and they just see that anger. It speaks so loudly, and they think, I don't want anything to do with whatever it is that is making you so angry. That is a tough thing. So we're not talking about laying down your values or compromising your convictions. We're just talking about carrying that posture of anger. What encouragement would you have just as a dad?
Yeah, because anger comes out, and it will torpedo your other relationships, even if you're angry about something unrelated. We know this. Like, for addicts, they have to battle when they're hurt, angry, lonely, tired. Anger is one of the things that lowers your ability to think straight and to love people. So what the best thing you can do for your kids is for you to be a disciple of Jesus and actually put this into action. And then they can see at least one person in this world that's at peace. Just one person. You know what's going to determine that? It's going to be what you pay attention to. If you constantly are putting angry news stuff on your mind, then there's no question who you're going to be. But if you're rehearsing gratitude, if you're talking to God about what you're doing in life together, if you're partnering with him, being at peace, man, that's so compelling. Being a non-anxious voice in this culture, which I think is going to get worse. I think it's going to get angrier and more anxious. And that's why we have to double down on peace with God. There's got to be some people who are salt and light, who are different. And I love the point you're making, because what your kids really need is to see you becoming more like Jesus. And that's going to depend on what you decide to pay attention to, what you're putting your mind on the most. That's everything. That's life and death. So that's what they need.
It is. And you quote, actually, Rachel Denhollander in your book, who was a victim of Larry Nassar, the physician who abused girls in gymnastics, and she said this. She said, I trust in God's justice and release anger and a desire for personal vengeance. It does not mean that I minimize or mitigate or excuse what he has done. It does not mean that I pursue justice on earth any less zealously. It simply means that I release personal vengeance against him, and I trust God's justice, whether he chooses to meet that out purely, eternally, or both in heaven on earth. That is so tough. Such tough truths today. Well, we've been talking to Brant Hansen, the author of Unoffendable, How Just One Change Can Make All of Life Better. And you can adjust your expectations to fit human nature and replace that anger with humility and gratitude and begin to love others with a practice of forgiveness, just like Jesus told us to. Well, listen, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. Don't forget, we're doing Truth for Youth Bibles this week. You can go to tfy.org and donate a Bible for a kid who needs it. And listen, we'll see you right here tomorrow, prescribing more hope for healthy families. I'll see you then.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.